Hello again. This is Matt Cain at MattCain.com on February 16th, 2006. And as you can imagine, it's hard to resist writing a phone parody about Cheney's latest venture and the poor fellow he managed to shoot. And so I've written one to the tune of On Top of Old Smokey. It's called Don't Hunt for Dick Cheney. And here goes. Don't hunt with Dick Cheney, you might end up dead. He'll aim for your torso, or even your head. He'll claim it's a quail shoot, but that's just a front. It really is humans that Dick likes to hunt. He might say he's sorry, and even act blue, but that's just 'cause Cheney don't want to be sued. So don't try to lobby the Veep on a hunt, 'cause shots meant for wildlife you're sure to confront. Well, that's it for today. If you'd like to read the text version of this song parody, go to madcane.com, that's MADKANE.com. Click on my Notables blog and scroll down to February 16th, 2006. Bye for now, and thanks.
Hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Microbrew with 39 minutes of file checking, hacking, deleting, yelper cut, and pasting the corporate media.
Nord. This is DJ Microbrew, and I'm podcasting live from Cosmic Pizza. Here goes FSCK, the corporate media 23, the special old school heavy metal edition dedicated to Mr. Bob Dot. Yep, Burr, you won't hear much slack in this podcast. That's what you gotta give me. Yep, what you gotta give. Gotta get and put it in this podcast. So here you go, some Beatles, some Beetlejuice, some media minutes, fresh out of Champaign, Urbana area. What else? I guess it's some Led Zeppelin, Go-So mashups. Album 4. In its entirety. Yep, Zoso, Nord. They go together or something, don't they? Oh! Ding, 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 that's my BlackBerry. Wait, I don't even have a BlackBerry. Did you hear that? That was the sound of me not having a BlackBerry. I am so not Periscope. Oh yeah, and we got Winona Ryder ranting about downloading free music, and we got a dream I had about Nani and Motorcycle. So yeah, that's about it unless we think of something else. Remember, two things. If you remember nothing else, remember these two things. Don't hate the media. FSCK, the corporate media. The revolution is brewing in small doses. Oh yeah, P.S. How about some morning coffee notes? Well, it's not morning, but I am drinking coffee and these are notes that I'm reading from. So there. So what's up with Dave Winter anyhow? Have I lost his RSS or is he like 7 weeks behind on daily messages or something? I think the last couple morning coffee notes, the last ones I remember are from like Christmas or early January. What's up with Adam Curry? Though I was going to try to spend my entire podcast this week trying my darndest to keep from saying the word Adam or the word curry. Oh well.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson. On February 7th, the contentious concept of network neutrality made its public debate debut on Capitol Hill. For more than 2 hours, members of the Senate's Commerce Committee listened to testimony from academics and online content and application providers about the need to make sure telephone and cable companies don't try to discriminate between types of data bits transported over their networks based on an online speaker's ability to pay. Senators first wrestled with just what the concept of network neutrality actually is. Jeffrey Citron, CEO of the voice-over IP telephone service provider Vonage, offered a helpful analogy to illustrate how abandoning the concept would fundamentally change the nature of information control on the Internet.
Imagine if the electric company could dictate which toaster or television you plug into the wall. Plug in our pre-approved affiliated toaster, and your power will work great. But if you don't, you can't promise the same level of service. Of course it sounds ridiculous. Power companies don't care who makes power toasters for our televisions. We plug them in, and they just simply work. The same should be true for the Internet.
Doing away with network neutrality will also diminish the robustness of the Internet itself. Gary Bakula spoke at the hearing as a representative of a consortium of universities and corporations that are developing what's called Internet 2, the next generation of broadband connectivity, which offers speeds at least 100 times faster than current broadband connections. Bakula told senators that data discrimination does nothing but complicate network design and increase the cost of network construction.
All of our research and practical experience supported the conclusion that it was far more cost-effective to simply provide more bandwidth. With enough bandwidth, there is no congestion.
Therefore, so long as adequate broadband capacity exists, there is no need to abandon the principle of network neutrality. However, instead of providing that capacity, phone and cable companies would rather skimp on the growth and maintenance of their network infrastructures in order to squeeze every penny possible out of all network users. In other words, the corporate drive to abandon network neutrality stems primarily from claims that broadband bandwidth is in scarce supply. Vinton Cerf argued that such a rationale is disingenuous. You should know. Commonly called the father of the Internet, now a vice president at Google, Cerf co-developed the core protocols that make Internet-based communication possible. And he says until there is true nationwide availability of broadband, something major phone companies in particular pledged to do several years ago, and claim that a viable bandwidth marketplace exists in the U.S. rings hollow.
According to the statistics from the FCC in 2004, only 53% of Americans had a choice of broadband access either from cable companies or from the telcos with their DSL service. 28% had only one choice, either cable or DSL. And 19% don't have any choice at all. There is no broadband.
Those who represented the big phone and cable companies at the hearing seemed to be on the defensive from the public backlash that has developed over the last month over this issue. Kyle McCormick, president of the United States Telecom Association, a trade group that lobbies in D.C. for the likes of AT&T, Bell South, and Verizon, among many others, made what appeared to be a solemn and significant pledge.
Our commitment to you is this. We will not block, impair, or degrade content, applications, or services.
But McCormick argued strongly against formalizing the principle of network neutrality in law out of a supposed fear that such government regulation would stifle further innovation on the Internet. Stanford law professor Lawrence Lessig strongly disagreed. He noted that although the words network neutrality might not be written down anywhere in U.S. telecommunications law, it is the key principle that has governed the construction and regulation of communications networks in the United States for at least the last four decades.
I feel a little bit like the stable boy who spends his whole life shoveling, I guess I can't use that word here, right? And I'm surrounded by a bunch of academics offering a bunch of theories about how we should remake telecommunications law to get to the grand new age. And I say, you should look to the past and learn the lessons from the past before you radically change the infrastructure within which innovation is occurring.
For now, the future of the Internet remains murky. At least one senator has pledged to introduce legislation that would mandate network neutrality among Internet service providers, but there's no indication of just how much support exists for such an effort. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
Waiting for the eastern glow. The apples all run the valley. Oh, all the seeds of happiness. The ground is rich from tender care. Repay, do not forget.
Oh, no, no, don't in the dark night.
The fruits in the morning. Apples turn to brown and black. The tyrant's face is red. Shake the castle walls, the ring rays are out in black. Right on,
reservation, right on.
Shoot straight to them before.
No comfort yet, the fire at night, the lights are face so cold.
Dance in the dark at night, sing to the morning light.
I got news for you. Check this one out. This straight out of Associated Press. Feds mistakenly turn over secret papers. Federal prosecutors and investigators in Dallas acknowledged in court documents that they mistakenly gave defense lawyers information about the inner workings of secretive counterterrorism investigations. It took federal officials 4 months to discover that in April, they turned over secret court applications for wiretaps, which often have sensitive information from U.S. and foreign intelligence agencies, according to court papers that were unsealed this week. The materials were given to lawyers for the Holy Land Foundation for Relief and Development and seven of its senior officers, who have been indicted on charges they illegally funneled millions of dollars to support the Hamas militant group.
The U.S. government designated Hamas as a terrorist organization in 1995. Last month, U.S. District Judge A. Joe Fish sided with prosecutors in ruling that the defense lawyers should not have had access to the materials. The lawyers have been cleared to view documents classified as secret for purposes of preparing their defense, but they may not share the information with the defendants or anyone else. Please, leak it to me, baby. Leak it, leak it, leak it.
Okay.
The case against the now-defunct Muslim charity is built in part on wiretaps, informants, and information provided by Israel, according to court documents. The government intended to turn over intercepted communications in Arabic and summaries of written translations involving free people or organizations that were subject to orders from the Secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. The 16 boxes of classified information also contain FISA applications, orders, and other related material that should not have been provided to defense counsel. Assistant U.S. Attorney James Jacks wrote in a filing asking for the return of the documents. Officials blamed the mistake on an unnamed FBI agent and clerical staff who were called in to help copy files because prosecutors and agents familiar with the case were involved in another trial. Jacks, in a brief conversation with the Associated Press Thursday, declined to comment on the case, pointing instead to the government's numerous filings. When prosecutors and FBI agents in August realized what had transpired, Jacks unsuccessfully sought access to the room in the courthouse that serves as an office for the defense lawyers in the case. A few days later, Jacks went to the room and demanded to know what the defense lawyers were doing. Nancy Hollander, a member of the defense team, wrote Judge Fish in August. The judge ordered the room sealed. Both government and defense lawyers are barred from discussing exactly what was turned over, but defense lawyers have indicated they believe the information would help their case. Amen. Leak it to me, leak it to me. Over here, over here.
Aki, aki, aki.
All right, what else we got? Oh, it's time for a weird-ass dream. Ames, Iowa. Winona Ryder and I are taking a motorcycle safety class together. Her bike goes whack and dumps her, hits a wall, climbs the wall, flips over, turns coming at her, just misses her, knocks over the one I dismounted to run up and try to help save her. It comes back and almost hits us both again. Some cop wrestles it into my friend Donnie's parents' house over in Connecticut. I get to spend a little time with Nani working the press. She teaches me a lot. I get to tell my story about Lawrence Welk's bowling alley. Oh, all right, I'll tell you. 1992, I'm in Ames, Iowa in a bowling alley with a walk across the country. And our host gives us the royal tour, shows us just this mundane bowling alley. I had earlier been playing piano up on the stage, this old, run-down, broken-down. Oh, man, the thing was so tragically out of tune, it wasn't even funny. Dust pouring out of it the minute you hit notes, stuff like that. And he tells us the final thing that he's so, so, so proud of is this bowling alley was one of only four locations from the 40s to the early 60s where ballroom dancing was filmed for the Lawrence Welk Band. Oh, he's telling us that, and we didn't have the heart to tell him that that's probably the last time while he was doing his Awana and Atua right there in Ames, Iowa. It's probably the last time that piano had been tuned. So, I digress. She gets to give a glimpse of what she said in court on her shoplifting charge, which got removed for national security. Oh, all right, I'll tell you what that was, too. They asked her how come she took $3,000-some-odd worth of clothing out of that store and didn't pay for it. It was shortly after 911, and she very plainly told the judge, "Your Honor, Mr. Bush told all of us to go shopping, but he never told us we should pay for anything."
should have been at the beginning of this podcast, but I'm going to keep it right here. Hello, it's 5:55 a.m. Thursday. I'm TJ Michael Dinks, and this is File System Check with Yelper Media, podcast number 23. You know, it's a special story. Yeah. You already know that. That was at the beginning, right? Well, it's 2 days after Valentine's Day, and 1 day after my late father's birthday. I'm smoking a Pall Mall in his honor. And that's that.
Thank you for calling. Your call and your business are very important to us, so please hold the line and we'll be right with you.
Please continue to hold, and we'll be with you in just a moment.
Assistance is just ahead. hold the line.
Please continue to hold. Please continue to hold. Please continue to hold. And we'll be with you in just a moment.
Your call and your business are very important to us, so please hold the line. Your call and your business are very important to us, so please hold the line. Please hold the line. Please hold the line. Hold the line. Hold the line. Hold.
Just a moment. Just a moment. Just a moment. Just a...
Hold the line. Hold the line. Hold the line. And we'll be right with you. Your call and your business are very important to us. So please hold. Please hold. Please hold. Very important to us. Very important to us.
Is a perfect ad for the coffee shop that I'm sitting podcasting in right now. So I'm going to give it away. We just read it verbatim. Oh my God, I'm at a place called Cosmic Pizza, really near where the Ken Kesey Mary Prankster statue sits, probably like 3 blocks from here. I'm having this thing called Cosmic Cosmonauts. It's dough rolled up with a ton of pesto, fresh garlic, run through the pizza oven, and a marinara sauce that's garlicky to start with, too. After typing all that, I then type, don't suppose you're going to get the magnitude of the word God, even if it were in all caps. This is like a hallucinatory amount of minced organic garlic. And my friend is typing back some yum. That's about it.
The major record labels say that downloading their music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. When an MC rhymes over a sampled beat, that's stealing. Have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant? Watch out, Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of 5 corporations? And stop giving them your money. Don't pay for major label music, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Even better, burn them CDs of the music they like, so they won't even wonder about it. If we pull the plug on the major labels, music gets better. To find out more about what you can do, check out downhillbattle.org.
Now I'm pod testing. I'm seeing how far out of Cosmic Pizza I can get. If they're losing faith with stock laptop Wi-Fi and no external antennas. I didn't get real far. My hunch was that they were pumping out signal, making an almost hot spot over by the Kesey statue. And I'm walking toward the Kesey statue. And, of course, just as I was turning on this recording, signal went out. So, I'm going to guess it was about 100 yards or so. Now, we're coming up close to where the statue sits, I think. A block over and a block up. I know I get a real faint signal, but I can't circle it or anything right there at the statue. If I can figure out who it is, I can make a really interesting proposal. That being, I'll be busking right there for tips just about every day. And if they would boost their signal just enough, see now a signal's starting to come in as I'm walking closer toward. They would boost their signal just enough to pull it in from right there on my brakes from busking. I'd be perfectly pleased to make an advertisement. The primary part of my pattern in between songs. Get it? Wouldn't that be wicked cool? I'm Buskin, Buskin Podcaster, thanks to blah, 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 blah. Go get a bagel there. Go get a hot dog there. Go buy your office products there. Whatever, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. A non-commercial free ad. Potentially a commercial in
endeavor, but that's okay. That's okay. If they will give a signal away.
Woohoo!
Haha! Okay, that's that.
Hi, this is TV's Ally McBeal, and I have a very serious message for you about music downloading. The major record labels bribe radio stations, fix prices on CDs, steal money from musicians, and sue families with children. But when you download their music for free, you can listen to the music you like without propping up a system that hurts artists. If you want to support musicians, then go to a show or buy a CD on an independent label. To find out more, check out downhillbattle.org.
It's a good time to call a general strike. Is it a good time to call a general strike? Maybe it's too early, but I know it's not too late. Is it a good time to call a general strike?
The city of New London, Connecticut has condemned homes and businesses to make way for an upscale redevelopment plan. That includes a luxury hotel, condominiums, a health club, and a river esplanade. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor asked whether a positive verdict for the city would mean that any city had the right, for example, to decide that a Motel 6 must make way for a Ritz-Carlton. The New London lawyer responded that it would. On behalf of the families who refused to move, Institute for Justice lawyer Scott Thor noted that, quote, every home, church, or corner store would produce more jobs and tax revenue if it were a Costco or a Shop.
From WCBN FM in Ann Arbor, this is Black Box Radio, week of March 1st, 2005. Tune in to Black Box Radio every Tuesday at 6 p.m. or download the show from the Michigan Independent Media Center at www.michiganinc.org.
With a woman unkind, smoke my stuff and drink all my wine. Made up my mind, make a new start. Going to California with an aching in my heart. Someone told me there's a girl out there with love in her eyes and flowers. Yeah. Took my chances on a big jet plane.
Never let them tell you that we're all the same. Oh, the sea was red and the sky was gray. I wondered how tomorrow could ever follow today. Mountains and the canyons start to tremble and shake. The children of the sun begin to wake. Watch out. The king, they say she plays guitar and cries and sings. La la la. Ride a white man in the footsteps of doom, trying to find a woman who never, never, never been born. Standing on the hill in the mountain of dreams, telling myself it's not as hard.
my fellow Americans, ask not what you can do for your country. Ask what your country can do for you.